I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, our weekly food news roundup. Fall is finally here, so it's time to get funky and devote an episode to some of our favorite spunky microbes.
Fungi just provide this beautiful, whimsical lens on how the world works. They have so many roles. They're this strange and magical-seeming group of organisms, but they've got it all figured out.
Should you eat the cheese rind? Can you eat the rind? These are like the biggest questions.
We'll answer all of your questions about mysterious mushrooms and crazy curds. Plus, we'll give you a sneak listen to the newest season of Modernist Breadcrumbs. So tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This program is brought to you by Jewel, sous vide by Chef Steps. Jewel takes the guesswork out of cooking. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
Welcome to On the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. Happy Halloween, everyone. This is the 195th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an award-winning chef and restaurateur who has a new cookbook out, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to have soul. Put your character, your history, your traditions, and spirit into everything you do. Be real and let your creativity and passions shine, staying true to your essence. Soulfulness draws people in and makes us feel good. So think soulfully. It's a good way to live. That's my tip today. Now, I'm thrilled to have my guest calling in. It is Michael Solomonov. He is the co-founder of Cook and Solo Restaurant Partners and executive chef and co-owner of Zahav, Philadelphia's pioneering modern Israeli restaurant. Michael also co-owns Philly's Federal Donuts, Dizengoff, Abe Fisher, Goldie, and the philanthropic Rooster Soup Company. Michael is a four-time James Beard Award winner, and that includes Outstanding Chef in 2017 and Best Chef Mid-Atlantic in 2011. He has a new cookbook out, which we'll be talking about, which he co-wrote with his business partner, Stephen Cook, and it's entitled Israeli Soul, Easy, Essential, Delicious. And he's written two other books with Stephen, Federal Donuts and Zahav, and Zahav is those other two James Beard Awards he won, which he received for Best Book of the Year and Best International Cookbook. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you.
I could go on and on. You have even more accolades than that. But
I really appreciate it. It's so funny. I'm not sure what's happening with the connection, but there is like the loudest rap music playing with your voice.
Oh, really?
It sounds like they're... like Mardi Gras is happening in my living room right now.
Okay, so. I think we can work on that. I think that's my, my show music that might be playing.
Much better.
Better?
I like it, though. It got me really fired up. I was like, man, this is going to be a loud, like, voices show.
You know? that's the new thing. I'm gonna. Okay. Well, yeah.
I would keep it. I would really, really keep it. I felt like I should start like blow it like fireballs out of my mouth or something and running through my living room.
Too funny. Too funny.
Thank you.
Well, I'm
so
glad
much.
It got you psyched up.
Yeah, I'm super fired up and a little disoriented, which is perfect. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I'm a big fan of yours and everything you do. I've been to almost all your restaurants. So, I'm familiar with your cooking and I want to start out with the show with going back to how you got started as a chef and what led you into becoming a restaurateur?
I started cooking because I dropped out of college and I moved back to Israel and I had like no skill. I was like a 3-semester art major with like poor Hebrew, which does not get you very far if you get a job in Israel. So I got a job working in a bakery, which I feel like is kind of like how we all sort of get started, you know, and maybe not specifically a bakery in Israel, but sort of like falling into cooking. And, I fell in love with it. I enjoyed it. I liked the sort of hard work, and I really learned a lot about Israel, being sort of an immigrant worker there. And then, I went to culinary school in the States and moved to Philly and worked at a couple awesome restaurants here. One was called Striped Bass, and my chef and mentor, Terrence Fury, was like right out of Le Bernardin and really super refined, really intense, and really taught me how to like cook and be sort of a great, great wine cook and be responsible and have standards. And then I got a job working Vetri restaurant and under Mark Vetri, and he, you know, taught me about sort of like having a passion, having identity, and really taking like simple sort of under these sort of like unsung heroes of in the food world and really making them shine. So with Terrence and Mark, I really learned a skill and a craft, and then my partner Steve Cook hired me to be a chef at his restaurant Marigold Kitchen, and that was my first job as like a chef. And that, and then we opened Zahav a couple years later, and that was it.
That was it. And that was Zahav is at the 10-year mark. Am I right on that? Which is incredible.
May 5th was 10 years, which is insane.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Zahav to me, and I think to a lot of people, when you come to Philadelphia, you have to go to Zahav. It's just become that must visit. How do you think that's happened, or why? Do you have any rhyme or reason?
I mean, it's really hard to be objective and give you an answer. I mean, it's sort of ingrained into what we do. We love, like, Israel was sort of waiting, I think, to be discovered and sort of brought over to the U.S. Or I'm not sure what it was. Like, I think that people weren't, they didn't accept that Israel had a cuisine, or they, you know, couldn't sort of put it all together. And I feel like we were kind of right place, right time for that. And I feel like this is something that we care deeply about, sort of emotionally, if not spiritually, and it was something that we wanted to make happen. It was something that it was important to us, the way that we could, you know, provide a narrative to Israel that maybe people weren't exposed to. And then, you know, I also think the American palate, like, America wants this. They want new, they want exciting. I feel like Israeli cuisine is sort of like American cuisine. It's all these different things that have sort of come together, and then it's like very vegetable forward, a lot of like primitive cooking methods, which I think what people are getting excited about, sort of postmodernist, you know, picking apart, dissecting. I think there's something really elemental, obviously, about the way that we cook, and we incorporate 100 different cuisines and cultures and gastronomies, and it's vegetable forward. I mean, it's sort of just a matter of time, I think, before somebody popularized it, and that was kind of our mission.
Yeah, well, you accomplished that, I would say. When did you find was the right time for you to start opening new restaurants? And because that really changes the game when you go from 1 to 2, and then now you're at 6 or maybe even more than that.
Yeah, I mean, we have like 5 Federal Donuts now, so we're probably close to 12 restaurants.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't know if there's a right time or a wrong. I mean, you know, hindsight is sort of 20/20, and I can look back and say, well, that was a great decision, or that was, you know, we should have waited on that. But here we are with all these restaurants, and I don't know. I think that opened Federal Donuts shortly after Zahav, and it was kind of by accident. And that was exciting. On day two, we were like, well, maybe we should start opening a few of these, you know. And we've opened restaurants before where we're like, man, we should not have done that. That was absolutely not the right time. And how do we not learn our lessons after making so many stupid mistakes? But we continue to make very stupid mistakes all the time. And I think you have to be okay with that, I think, with restaurants.
Oh, you're humble. But when you say by a mistake, I mean, I've been to Federal Donuts, and you have the donuts and you have the fried chicken, but it was just, how did you come up with that concept? Was that?
So that was five partners that basically came to dinner, Tommy and Bobby, who were the first to bring fancy coffee to Philly. And then our partner, Felicia D'Ambrosia, who's an amazing food writer and really sort of ingrained in the food world here in Philly, and Steve and I, who owned, three restaurants at that point, but we're good friends with Tom and Bob, and we just wanted to, and Felicia, and we just wanted to, we each put in a couple $1,000, and we wanted to open a donut shop, and we wanted to, we were like eating a lot of Korean fried chicken at the time, and that is just coffee donuts chicken, you know, so it kind of came out.
And there you have it. What about expanding beyond Philadelphia? I know most of your places are in Philly. And I was going to comment before too. I know you grew up in Pittsburgh. What drew you to move to Philadelphia? And is that just where you feel it's home and you're not going to go anywhere for?
Well, yeah, I mean, so that's a great question. I ended up in Philly sort of after, it was like Pittsburgh, Israel, South Florida for culinary school, and then Philly because it was like kind of on the way to New York, and because the girl that I moved here with at the time, her brother lives here, and we just, you know, I was like, fell in love with it. Philly's a really charming city. It's really easy. It was really kind of awesome to be here, and there was such a exciting, it was an exciting type of restaurants here too when I moved in 2001, and that was the reason that we got here. My partner Steve moved around the same time as well. And I feel like we just sort of watched Philadelphia change and grow and progress, you know, in front of our eyes. And in a way, you're sort of part of it by living here. You know, it's a pretty small, I mean, it's a large city, but like the communities here are sort of tight knit. So you kind of feel like you're part of it. You're part of the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. I find when I visit, it's more condensed than New York City.
Yeah.
And but like your dining scene is really strong now, and most of that's yours.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
We're a small part of like something really great happening here in the city.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a little break, and then we're gonna come back and we'll talk about your new book that's out and. All that jazz. So stay with us.
All right.
This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This program is brought to you by Jewel Sous Vide. My name is Katie Mosman Wadler. I'm the executive director of HRN and a real-life Jewel user. I use Jewel to help me host the most delicious dinner parties. When you cook with Jewel, there's zero guesswork. So steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, vegetables, and eggs all come out exactly the way you like them. The Paired app is super intuitive and has a great visual doneness guide. Jewel is awesome for prepping many perfect portions, making it easy to cook for a crowd, and it's hands-free so you can focus on entertaining while Jewel does the work. And pro tip, Jewel is also great for travel. I throw mine in my suitcase if I'm headed to a rental house with any kind of uncertain kitchen. From perfect steak to juicy, tender Thanksgiving turkey, Jewel makes the best food you've ever tasted. Just be sure to save some room for mini jars of pumpkin pie. Jewel, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code HRN, as in Heritage Radio Network, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code HRN.
Oh,
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Michael Solomonov. He's an award-winning chef and the co-owner of Zahav and many other restaurants in Philadelphia. And he has a new cookbook out called Israeli Soul, Easy, Essential, and Delicious, which he co-wrote with his business partner, Stephen Cook. So Michael, let's talk about this book, because this is your third book that you've collaborated on.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you find the time, first of all, to write books?
Steve Cook, for Zahav, he had never written anything professionally ever, and he tried like a sample, he had like a head note, and then a sample chapter, and then a chapter, and then he wrote this book and ended up winning 2 James Beard Awards, including Book of the Year. So
incredible.
So after that, you get super confident.
Yeah.
And that was like super, that was obviously very liberating for us, not only because it's nice to have somebody that isn't just a ghostwriter that is very talented, but also, you know, we sort of speak the same, we have the same voice when it comes to these things. And we discovered this cuisine and sort of our relationship. We've explored our relationship to Israel, you know, together in a way, in many ways. And that, that is a great thing. You know, I think it's really authentic. And I think that this sort of idea of us, our feet sort of half in, you know, 1 foot in Israel, 1 foot in the States is important for the reader. So yes. I don't know how we had time to do it. We don't have time to do it. It's a short answer, but you make time.
You've managed. So your first two books were based on your restaurant concepts, and this one is Israeli Soul, based on Israel. So how did you do your research, and why did you decide to do a book that was more in a general, you know, a cuisine or a concept versus, you know, a physical restaurant?
Well, we did the Hav through the restaurant, and that was Israeli food and the culmination of the cuisines that make up Israel and my personal history and, you know, the history of the country and so on and so forth. That was through the prism of the restaurant. And Israeli Soul is us basically just taking that whole team and going to Israel. And that's kind of what we did for that. And it was taking the readers through the markets and through the different, you know, homes and restaurants and all these like little places that make up an experience eating there, and then we shot it all here in Philly, and that was, you know, that was it. And I think the reason is because we want people to be able to cook that food, and we want them to see the food and breathe the food and taste the food and smell the food and walk through Israel, you know, but also have it be really accessible, very simple, and really sort of attainable in your tiny little ill-equipped apartment that you live in New York, right? And I don't mean just you.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, it's true.
Right?
It's true. I mean, the book is beautiful. It's heavy. It's a big book. And I love that you have the step-by-step instructions with photos. It is very user-friendly. And then the different, I don't know, going through some of the chapters, you have the in the hand with falafel and making pita. I mean, you're sharing all your secrets. Yeah. But I actually went, one of my friends had a housewarming party recently and cooked many dishes from your book, including your 5-minute hummus. And it's just like, it's smart recipes for, yeah, busy people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and that's kind of it. It has to be, you know, the Zahav hummus is simple, but it, you know, it takes a little bit of planning. And this was like, what's the minimal amount of cleaning that we have to do? How quickly can you make this? And instead of like having to like, you know, sort of spoon out tahina into a measuring container to then put into, you know, it's like you end up losing half the tahina in a cup container and so on and so forth. We just wanted, you know, to have your jar of tahina, dump it into a Roboku with the right amount of ice water, salt, lemon, yada yada, and then just be done with it, you know?
Yeah, well, it was delicious. I mean, I guess you have the different books now for different people's level of how much time they want to spend in the kitchen.
Right.
What about talking about Israeli cuisine versus Middle Eastern cuisine? Or, I mean, there's...
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that's sort of one of the misconceptions about Israeli cuisine, is that it's like only Middle Eastern or only Jewish or only Mediterranean. It obviously incorporates, it incorporates everything sort of over there. I mean, to say that it's not partially Palestinian is just wrong, right? And to say that it's not Yemenite or Moroccan or a little bit Jewish. I mean, so you've got the Palestinian cuisine and the Levantine cuisine that like the Druze had like in the north, and the Bedouins that were like in the Galilee. And then you've got Gazan cuisine, which is very different than what you get. And that, you know, and that was there. And then before Israel, the Ottomans were there, and they obviously spread the most amount of food in the Middle East to the Mediterranean, which is why everybody stuffs grape leaves and kind of makes the same coffee. And then you've got all the Jews that moved back post diaspora, that brought with them this diasporic cuisine that wasn't just like food of Yemen, but it was like Jewish food of Yemen, which meant that it wasn't sort of milk and meat mixed. It was, and there was like no pork and shellfish. And then there was also this sort of mandated way to cook on Fridays with the overnight slow cooking in an oven that can't really be messed with. So, you've got a lot going on there. And it's a very, there's not really a short way to like describe it, you know, because it's definitely not just Middle Eastern, and it's definitely not, it's definitely not Jewish and whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
There are Jews living everywhere. And it's definitely not just Mediterranean. So, I don't know. I'll tell you what it's not.
Well, you love cooking Israeli food. I don't know. Do you have the desire to open a French restaurant go to Chinese food? I mean, like, or are you sticking with your lane?
I think that when the ish hits the fan in restaurants, which happens all the time, having a connection and a belief and part of your identity and what it is that you do makes it really hard for it to fail. Not to say that it won't, but like, you know, this is something I believe in, and this is like my life's work, not just the restaurant, but something greater. You know, we use the restaurants for this mission. And in addition to like loving the food, being genuinely interested all the time in it, and really loving like restaurants and being a chef and my team, I'm also connected, and this is part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of like my mission, you know, and sometimes it runs deeper than the sort of superficial reasons why we get into like our careers, you know? And so far that's what's worked for us, you know, and it might really deviate a little bit. The effects aren't quite the same. Like the consumer, I think the guest, the diner can taste whether you sort of put your heart and soul into what it is that you do, in my opinion.
I agree. And that was a great answer. So let me ask you my question from my last guest on episode 194. I had on Chandra Ram. She's a cookbook author and editor of Plate Magazine. And and she talked in the show about how she had a layover in Philadelphia, and she ran into the city and went to Zahav and and sat at the bar and had a great meal and recently. So she's a big fan. So she wants to know, what do you want to do in the future as a chef and restaurateur? More mentorship and staff development, or more in the kitchen and cooking?
That's a great question. I mean, right now, what makes me the happiest is working in Zahav. That's what I enjoy doing. We have a staff of 250 people, so it's not something I can do as much as I want to do, but it is what... kind of what I have to do, you know? So I think the more we do, the more I want to just work at Zahav, but it's unreasonable. We have big plans. I want to use this cuisine as form. I want to, we are diplomats,
you know, and I want to create something bigger, and I want to facilitate a conversation that I don't believe is happening with traditional forms of diplomacy. And that, unfortunately, means that I can't, like, chop every onion, or I can't make every loaf of laffa. I used to do that, basically. If you, for the first 6 years of the restaurant, like Monday through Saturday, I would basically make every piece of laffa that, like, went out, you know? And I can't do that anymore. I'm still going to go in. Actually, after this interview, I'm going to go in and I work the bread oven as much as I can. But it's, unfortunately, like, my time is, like, a little bit too valuable to do that. So, yeah, I don't know. I wish I could answer that more clearly. And I wish sometimes I could just make bread, but we have a lot to do, a lot of goals, you know?
Yeah, no, you answered that well. And we'll, I look forward to seeing what transpires over the next couple of years with your big plans. So,
yeah, I know.
I know. I can only imagine. So, okay, let's take another break, and then we're going to come back and we'll play my speed round game and we'll talk some industry news. This is Only Industry on Heritage Radio Network. All the clocks set tonight, looking low to your side, so just fly. Seems alright. All the good set inside, all the good set tonight. Speak your mind. They'll wake you up, they'll get to you in time. And we're back. This is Only Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Michael Solomonov. So it is time for my speed round game. So, Michael, what this is I'm going to name a couple of things, giving you a preference, a choice, and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. That's my sample. So,
you're like, one of, right, either chocolate or vanilla will answer the rest of the questions. Go.
No, okay, I'm ready. Here I go. Or here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Vanilla. I'm just kidding. eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Mocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Pat's or Gino's?
Pat's.
Good to know. Mayonnaise or mustard?
Mustard.
I read that somewhere.
I'm scared of mayonnaise.
Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert. Ugh, it's hard though. That's a tricky one.
I've stumped you finally. Cheese plate or dessert got you? Well, you can have both.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Last one is Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Philadelphia.
Oh, come on. We know the answer. Philly.
Oh, Philly. Yeah, I figured that was an easy one for you, but no offense to Brooklyn and Manhattan. So that was the game. You were fast.
Thank you.
And I'm taking note of where to get a cheesesteak next time I'm in Philly. You know, when I was there once, I did both of those, Pat's and Gino's, at the same time, like, to compare.
Yeah.
Which was excessive, but hey.
Which one did you like better?
I liked Pat's better. I went with...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it is subjective, so... Okay, so industry news. I saw a story on The Guardian entitled, "The Chefs Who Are Closing for Dinner to Pursue a Healthier Life." And the byline was, restaurant culture has long been defined by aggression and long hours and mental and physical breakdowns, but a new generation of chefs are breaking the mold. This is by Tony Naylor. So I saw this and I thought it was a good article to talk about, especially, you know, with you as a chef and just seeing, I mean, this is something, you know, the work lifestyle balance and trying to cut back hours so you can have more of a life and a healthier lifestyle. And this restaurant they were talking about in particular was in Edinburgh in England. And it was talking about a restaurant called Azel, which the chef is going to doing 4 days a week of open for business. And I'm just thinking, that sounds lovely, but I don't know any restaurants in Manhattan that can survive just being open 4 days a week. So I think it's, yeah. I think it's a tough situation, even though this is something, of course, I think would be great if everyone could do, but I don't know what's your take?
To me, it's less about like the days or hours that you're open. It's really about, I mean, the hours, like, everybody has to, there's a limit to the amount that people can work, right? And so it's less about that. Maybe it's just for the chef's lifestyle. I guess I think about the whole team. And it's a little bit hard, sustainability means a lot of things. There's obviously the environmental and ecological. There's the financial sustainability, which is like important. At the end of the day, this is sort of business. So you can be open 4 days a week and still employ people and like take a paycheck or whatever, then great, by all means do it. But like, it only works if it kind of works, you know? So I think that any model, as long as the people that are operating with it are like covered, you know, then sure, do it. 4 days would be great. That would be amazing, you know? But I think that for us, there was a time where to be a chef meant you worked every day and you like didn't have a good, you know, for me, it's always like, I don't understand how the old school people did it because they don't, how do you have kids? Do you not see your kids? Is that how it works? I suppose, you know, my dad and like that generation, they just kind of worked all the time. And that was the way that it's kind of the way it was, you know, but I think that to me is the hard part, is that you can't really have like a family or participate the way that I would want to if you are working all the time. And we've got, you know, there's definitely a certain amount of sacrifice that you make. I mean, nights and weekends kind of suck, but you can do a lot, you know, within those parameters. And there are daytime hours that are like most people don't really have that you can kind of sneak, which are great. But I think that in general, I think people are trying to advocate for a healthier quality of life. And that means, for me at least, it's being like sober and clean and sort of promoting that within our organization or even larger. That means fair pay. That means a good quality of a good environment that you can work in, that you are not susceptible to things like harassment, bigotry, bias, any of that stuff. And then after that, it's like making sure that the restaurant can like, you know, make money and pay everybody or pay the owners, you know, which is also helpful.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think it used to be, I don't know, it was being a chef or working in restaurants, I think it was more about the partying or the just the grind of it, where now I feel people are seeking wellness and looking to take care of themselves and their staffs more. I think it's a good, I hate to say a trend, but I think it's a good way to be living and having, and you're right. Like, I don't know when you're working all those hours, how you do have a family and, see your kids. But, I'm also a proponent of sobriety and someone who's been, who hasn't had a drink in a long time. And I support the wellness and the lifestyle as well. Cause I worked in restaurants a long time ago and I remember the hours and it was hard. It was very hard. It's a hard industry. So I think whatever we could, or restaurateurs can do to create a healthful and work environment, and if it is cutting back hours or just supporting people, I think that's great.
Yeah, awesome.
So that was that article. And the other article I just had was yesterday from, it was, the awards were in Bogota, Colombia, but is the Latin America's 50 best restaurants 2018 were announced. And this is San Pellegrino and Agua Panna's award ceremony. And so just give a shout out to Maido in Lima, Peru, still the number one spot. I've been there. Have you been there?
Wait a minute. Wait, did they get what number? Did they
number one. Place? Number one.
Unbelievable.
I love it, that place. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, they're awesome. And they we got to hang out together, which was great, you know, and cook together. And it is, what an amazing thing. Super happy for them.
Yeah, me too. That's, Matsuharu Tsumura, if I'm saying his name right. And he's a sweetheart.
He's the best.
Really happy for them. So, congratulations to everyone on the list, and, people can go check it out. The World's 50 Best. And this is the Latin America edition. Okay. So we're going to take one more break and come back. I have my solo dining experience, and then we'll ask Michael for the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. And we're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Mission Chinese Food in Brooklyn. Here's the rundown. The location, 599 Johnson Avenue, Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York City. The concept, it's the second New York location of this cult favorite Szechuan-inspired restaurant that started in San Francisco's Mission District. The chef and owner, Danny Bowien, he's the star of season 6 of The Mind of the Chef on PBS. So why did I go? Well, I was in Bushwick and I was curious about this new spot. So my experience. So last week after my show, I took a walk over there. It was about 15 minutes by foot from where I am at Roberta's to get to Mission Chinese Food in Bushwick. I was there on the earlier side. It wasn't that busy yet, but I sat at the bar and I was very well taken care of by the staff. So what did I get? I had the Kung Pao pastrami with home fries, explosive chili, and peanuts. And also, they sent me out some white rice on the side. So my take, it was quite delicious. Really enjoyed it. And I really didn't find it super spicy. I was kind of, you know, not directly eating all the chilies on it, but it was delicious. So the ambiance, it's an industrial design with lighting that alternates shades of neon from green to blue to purple, and it has floor-to-ceiling windows facing the street, and to me it felt a bit like a club. It's perfect for spicy Chinese food cravings. Interesting tidbit. So since my visit, eater.com, they've wrote this whole article calling out a dish they have on the menu called iced Szechuan water pickles that costs $8, and there's this big story about that it's ice that they're charging $8 for. And so in a follow-up article, there was Danny explained that it's a bowl of Napa cabbage, radish, and hibiscus fermented in water and salt brine, served with pickling liquid and topped with pebble ice with a tingling chili oil and aloe salt. So it's more than ice, but anyways, if you want to go to Eater, you could see there's lots of people giving their opinions about this. These water pickles, which I did not have, so I do not have opinion about it. Personal fun fact, I had dined at Mission Chinese on the Lower East Side with a friend a couple years ago, and we had the mouth-numbing mapo tofu amongst other dishes, and I still remember how my mouth just went completely numb eating that dish. It was very, very spicy. So the cost of this meal was $19. That's not including tax or gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. I'd probably go to the Lower East Side location, though, instead of Bushwick, because I actually wasn't crazy about all the neon, but it is like a club if you want to eat in that sort of place. environment. Okay, the website's missionchinesefood.com. So, Michael, have you ever been to a Mission Chinese restaurant?
Yeah, we went to the one in San Francisco. It was awesome.
Oh, cool. I haven't been to that one. And what's the ambiance there?
It's like an old Chinese restaurant.
So all three places are very different.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah, Danny Bowen's, like, amazing. I mean, he's a sort of a personal hero of mine. I don't think we've ever met. Or maybe we have, like, some event or something like that. But all of our team goes, like, we all go to New York and eat his places and vice versa. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, you know, he is a great chef and he's done well. Okay, so the final question, I'm going to ask you to ask a question for my next guest. So next week, I'm having on J.D. Hilburn. He is a private chef. He was formerly, he was a chef de cuisine at Danube, which is one of David Boulay's restaurants. And he's now a private chef for Abby, or I don't know if he says, I think he says Abby Rosen. And Abby is a huge real estate investor who has multiple properties and restaurants in New York and around the world. So what would you like to ask JD?
Well, so Abby Rosen just opened a place with the...
The Major Food Group?
The Major Food Group in Israel, in Tel Aviv.
Oh, right.
I'd like to ask him if there's any way that they want to maybe open another restaurant in a boutique hotel in Israel, and if they are maybe looking for a chef. Wink, wink.
I'll find out. I don't know. Right. JD can give us the scoop. He's been a private chef for Abby for a long time. I forget. I'll find out how long, but it's many, many years. So, okay. I will find out. And thank you so much. That is the show. And
Thank you for having me.
I wish we had more time to talk and get into all of your restaurants and then find out more about what is in the future. But I'll stay tuned, and I just want to say congratulations on everything you've accomplished. It's very impressive, and I wish you the best.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me on. And I will see you in Philly. Okay.
Yeah, I'm due for a trip, and let me know when you're in New York.
Thank you.
So my guest today has been Michael Selimnov. He's the co-founder of Cook and Solo Restaurant Partners. He is an award-winning chef. He's the co-owner of Zahav, Abe Fisher, Federal Donuts, Dizengoff, The Rooster, and Goldie. He's the co-author of Israeli Soul, Easy, Essential, Delicious with Stephen Cook, as well as Federal Donuts and Zahav. And you can find his book. It's in local bookstores. It's on Amazon. And go to his website. The main one is cookandsolo.com. And you can follow him on Instagram at Mike Selimnov. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites bayerpublicrelations.com and sherrybayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. I would like to thank my engineer today, Noam. And again, thanks to Michael and to his book publicist, Carrie Bachman, who helped set things up. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with another live show. I hope you will tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
On the top of the hill, you see heaven. Top of the hill, you see home.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.